Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 225. We've got a real milestone for you here today, and we are celebrating it in a special way. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris, going to be joined by two dignitaries who we haven't put together previously for a segment on the program, but this is something that we've had in mind for a good long period of time. Ken Detweiler, I was his sidekick back in the day at Sports Talk Network when we were doing some programming there. He had his Life's a Pitch show, and I slotted in very nicely next to him for an extended period of time as his sidekick, talking a lot of baseball. And Ken has since joined the FDH Lounge for some segments over a period of time, but not until now with this gentleman, somebody who's really been one of our most regular participants over the course of the last 2 years or so. Good friend Steve Callis, presently broadcasting on Sports Talk Network. You can catch him based out of New York. He is on Monday through Friday at noon Eastern time. You can catch him every day on there, in addition to his appearances with us and his appearances over a period of time with WFAN, WVOX in New York. So these guys, again, when it comes to talking baseball, they're two of the primary guys that we've ever done it with in any capacity as far as their knowledge for the game, passion for the game. A lot of real similarities, guys who've done a lot of youth coaching, in addition to broadcast analysis of the game of baseball. So to talk some hot stove league, take a little bit of account of where we're at this point in time and how the 2013 season is shaking out. In terms of looking at these most important stories of the winter and getting the takes on it, who better to do it with than Ken Detweiler and Steve Callis, two of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries. Gentlemen, welcome to the program today.
Good to be with you, Rick.
Having me. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good to have you guys both on. Real pleasure. In the last 24 hours before our taping here, had a real bombshell for the second winner in a row. L.A. Angels coming out of nowhere for the big fish. Last year it was Albert Pujols. This year, Josh Hamilton. And the funny thing is, two of the best hitters in baseball, and they may not be the two best hitters in that lineup when you consider that they share it with Mike Trout, who many folks thought maybe should have been the MVP of the American League this past year. Counselor, we'll start with you on this one here. Steve Callis, what are your thoughts on this? The Angels just coming in and blowing everybody out of the water. My first thought is so much for them getting a chance to be proactive on Mike Trout. I kind of thought that, you know, they might not wait too long to let this play out, let him get into the arbitration years. But you start stacking up these deals, and they may have to kick the can down the road further than they want for securing his services long term, I would think.
Well, I don't know where they're printing money out in Los Angeles for the Angels and the Dodgers, Rick. I really have no idea, but there must be a machine because they're going to have to take care of Trout, who already, as everybody knows, is one of the best players in baseball. But when you look at their top four now, I mean, I'm trying to think of a better top four. You know, Eric Ibar will bat second, and he, you know, he's not with those guys. But when you go Trout, Ibar, I assume Pujols 3, Hamilton 4, although I don't know for sure. I mean, that's one of the great top fours that I can think of, frankly, ever. I mean, because Pujols is an all-time great already, Hamilton is unbelievable, and Trout's already established himself as a borderline superstar. I think he could have been the MVP as well this year. They're doing some smaller things, I think, with the pitching. You know, they got Joe Blanton. How good will he be? Tommy Hansen wasn't very good last year. They got Ryan Madsen, who, you know, was great for a while with the Phillies. They also got this AAA reliever, Brandon Sisk, who's supposed to be very good. So while they're doing the glitter, if you will, on the hitting side, they're also at least making some attempts on the pitching side as well. I think you have to make them the favorites, obviously. But, you know, we've seen it so much lately, including the Angels last year, who, of course, didn't make the playoffs. You know, you see it in other sports with the Eagles, the dream team that blew up. You see it everywhere this year with the Lakers, if you want to go to basketball. So, yes, but it's a cautiously optimistic yes, because the talent of a Hamilton and a Pujols, and throw in Mike Trout, I mean, it's not something I don't think you can get another three in the majors on any team who are that good.
No, I don't think you can either, but across town, as you pointed out, a real interesting rivalry. It would be almost shocking in the next decade at this rate if we didn't have a three-way World Series in SoCal, because you got Matt Kemp and Hanley Ramirez and Andre Ethier and Adrian Gonzalez over there for the Dodgers. It's very interesting. Kenny D., what are your thoughts on the way that this is shaking out here? I see that there were some comments that came in today from Vernon Wells, where he was a little bit hurt. I guess they had kind of told him that they weren't really going to be shelling out for any more hitting, so he feels that he was kind of misled. Once again, baseball is just a business when it's all said and done. But, Ken, I know you got to have some pretty strong thoughts on what this Angels organization's up to.
Well, Torrey Hunter is another one, too. He's
I'm sorry, Torrey Hunter. I was thinking, you know, I was – Vernon Wells is still there. They're still stuck with that bad contract.
That's true. But I have to agree with what Steve was saying, too. I mean, I love this time of year, first of all, guys. This is, like, so good if you're a baseball fan of any kind, dating back to when I was a kid. But because of this kind of thing. And I'm with Steve again on this. It's where are they printing the money up? This is, like, unbelievable. It used to be the Yankees and the Red Sox. But if we're going to crown somebody here in December, you have to go with the Angels. I mean, and I don't think they're done yet from the American League side. Gosh, in all L.A., World Series, that's not too far out of the realm. But I just, wow, you know, does this scream cap money? Does this, I mean,
yeah.
Of course, we saw it with Miami, though, too. The Marlins, man, that's. So, but
that's true.
Yeah, I think he is going to be awfully, awfully tough to beat, because I don't think they're done. So,
I don't think so either. And following up on what you said there, Ken, about the Yankees and the Red Sox, it's very interesting, because I've got a column for the blog that I've been thinking about for a while here that I was going to be putting to pen in the next couple weeks. That I think the end of the era has already come and gone. The era of the Yankees and the Red Sox and their predominance in the public mind. It's been a couple of years since either one of those teams has even been in the World Series. But does this just add more evidence to that? Because, again, Texas, they've suffered some setbacks this winter, but they're right there. Their payroll has been really growing the last couple of years, and they'll find uses for that money. You've got Toronto and Tampa in the same division, and we're going to talk more in depth on the AL East as we go along. But are you agreeing with my thoughts? First, I'll ask you, Ken, on the era of the Yankees and the Red Sox standing over everybody, at least in the public imagination, if not on the diamond, that era is done?
Yeah, I don't know if it's – gosh, it's an enigma. I see the Yankees, and I keep waiting for that other shoe to fall. When are they going to bust loose? But maybe they're going to stay with the mantra, hey, we're going to keep it under the cap, so to speak, or under the luxury tax. And I see the Red Sox – I'm not impressed with Napoli and the band of players that they're bringing over at this time. I mean, Dempster, yeah, but, yeah, and the Yankees are, good God, they're as old as I am. They're going to be in a slow-pitch softball league here pretty soon. But I'm not seeing it. Not that that breaks my heart, mind you, being an Indian fan, but all these years. But, yeah, I think it's switching. I really do. I think it could be over, because I hear Toronto's out there. They're making deals. Baltimore's up and coming. Tampa Bay does a wonderful job with the market they're in and the money they have. One can only guess. So,
yeah, but I think it's pointing in that direction. And, Steve, of the three of us, because Ken and I are based out of Ohio here, you being right in the middle of that whole corridor and getting exposed to the media on a daily basis, what's your sense about whether the sun has set on this particular era of the Yankees and the Red Sox and ESPN beating the debt to death 20 times a year and everything like that in the public mind, regardless of how much they actually accomplish on the diamond?
Well, I'm a little biased because I'm a lifelong Yankee guy, but I will say the Yankees for this year have taken a totally different tact, and you can tell by the signings they've made. I think they've got one more bullet left this year, because they brought back Carota for a year. They brought back Pettit for a year. Of course, Rivera, can he come back from that injury for one more year? They've taken the tact, instead of throwing the absurd contracts they threw at A-Rod, and I and many other people at the time wrote, what are the last 5 years of A-Rod's contract going to look like? And as you know, they already look like a disaster. But they signed Carota, Pettit, Rivera, all the one-year deals. If you live around here, Kevin Youkilis is a Yankee. It's hard to get to wrap your head around. You knew Johnny Damon was a lunatic and could easily play for both. But Kevin Youkilis, of course, the heart and soul of the Red Sox, treated poorly by Bobby Valentine, essentially run out of town to the White Sox. I think he comes back despite the Red Sox, 1 year, $12 million. And they also just signed Ichiro, who was great as a Yankee, not good, hitting 322 after hitting 270 the prior year and 270 the first half of this year. He woke up in New York. So just for this year, they're taking that. We're going to sign everybody we can for 1 year, overpay them. I love Youkilis as a player. He's not a $12 million a year player. But I think they have one more bullet in them. I do agree, however, with Ken on the Red Sox. You know, they really didn't do a lot for their pitching. Dempster is okay. What's he going to be in the AL East? The problem for all these pitchers when they leave wherever they're coming from, especially the National League, and they show up in the AL with the DH, and worse, they show up in the AL East. What are they going to be? So they haven't really done a lot to improve. You know, is Josh Beckett ever going to be good? What's Lester going to do for a full season? I love Clay Buchholz, but what is he up in Boston? So I agree halfway with what you said, Rick. I think the Red Sox, because of the depth in that division now, Tampa Bay's Tampa Bay. They got Will Myers and a bunch of other prospects. They lost James Shields. But you know they know. I think Tampa Bay is the best organization in baseball, both with their manager and their front office. Toronto, with that blockbuster trade, can Josh Johnson and Mark Burley be Josh Johnson and Mark Burley? I don't know. Jose Reyes, you know, if things are going good, saw him with the Mets forever. If things are going good, he's great. If things are going bad, he's not so great. So I think the Yankees have one bullet left in them at least. I don't think the Red Sox are in. Tampa's always Tampa with their pitching, even though they traded Shields. And, you know, Baltimore and Toronto, who I laughed at a year or two ago, they're in the wrong division. Well, you saw what Baltimore did last year, and depending how these two top pitchers pitch for Toronto, they could be in the mix this year, so it's going to be very interesting. I'd put a pause on the Yankees for what you think, Rick, but I'd press the play button for the Red Sox because I do think they're done, keeping in mind my New York bias, of course.
Well, that's taken into account there, Counsel, but I got to tell you, Steve, The thing about that, and I love when somebody does the work for me and when I only basically have to hold the mic figuratively, rather than set up everything on Toronto and Tampa, you just did it for me. So I'll just go right to the question on this. As I am starting to do my projections for 2013 ridiculously early, even before this week, I had Toronto and Tampa slotted in as taking the playoff spots out of that division. And I realize with the play-in, there's the chance of a third team making it as well from the division. I think you'd be hard-pressed to say that both Texas and the Angels at this point aren't strong contenders in the AL West. But for it to be Toronto and Tampa, first and foremost, Steve, your thoughts on the feasibility of that under the circumstances? Because, again, with the Yankees, they're going to let Swisher go. There's talks about that Granderson might be getting a little too expensive. Your thoughts on the feasibility of it and your thoughts about what that basically would do in terms of public perception there, for them to get lapped by two different teams that haven't even been in the mix consistently ahead of them, at least Toronto, and get taken out next year. What would the perception of that be?
Well,
I'd like to hear you sketch it out.
I think it would confirm what you just said. Is this the dawn of a new era? Is this the changing of the guard? Again, I'm more comfortable with everything you say about Tampa because I analogize. I got to tell you, my son was a diehard Yankee fan, and when they traded him to Tampa, he was a diehard Tino Martinez fan, and when they traded him to Tampa, he immediately became a Tampa Bay fan. And as you know, through all those years, they came in last every year, and they got all those first-round draft picks, and now they're excellent. But I think 10 years later, they have built – I analogize them. They haven't won the Super Bowl, but I analogize them a little bit to the Patriots. I think they have the best manager in Joe Maddon. I think they have the best front office. I think, as you have to do in baseball, they can do more with less. Obviously, if you get 7, 8, 9 first-round draft picks in a row, you're obviously going to have superstars down the road, and they did. But don't forget, they drafted guys like Rocco Baldelli, who had that strange sickness. They drafted Josh Hamilton. Imagine him on the Tampa Bay Rays. So I believe in Tampa Bay, as you do, Rick. Toronto, I'm going to put them in the category of I have to see it to believe it, because I love Josh Johnson, but he wasn't Josh Johnson last year. I like Mark Burley, but I just don't think he's really the Mark Burley of 2 or 3 years ago. And as I said, Reyes, who I watch forever with the Mets, is the most electrifying player in baseball at times, but he'll lay down a bunt single in the last game of the year and take himself out so he's guaranteed to win the batting title. He's a little bit of a selfish player in my mind and a little bit of a front runner. So Tampa, Toronto, brave pick if it ever came true. I think you're right. I think it would have to immediately change the perception, but I think it's going to be Tampa and someone else, and I'm going to still stick one more year. It'll be interesting if we have this little session next year at this time, if what you say about the Yankees is true, because I think they really are George Steinbrenner isn't around anymore, and the kids are not going to say, spend whatever you have to spend. They really do care about the new luxury tax. So I would take Tampa and the Yankees before I would take Tampa and Toronto.
Interesting. Now, Ken, I know from years of broadcasting with you and your thoughts on baseball, I know you're a guy that really has a passion for things being done the right way, which, as Steve said, really exemplifies the Tampa Bay organization. But what are your thoughts about the flux in that division there, especially when we're talking about and we're putting over Tampa for how they do stuff, this whole thing of taking advantage of Kansas City, in my estimation anyways, we're going to trade Will Myers for an ace. Well, I hate to tell you, you didn't get David Price. You got a guy who throws a lot slower than he does, quite frankly. But, thoughts on that, Ken? Tampa, Toronto, the teams trying. I haven't even mentioned Baltimore. I think we're all taking for granted there's going to be a little bit of a regression because of all the close wins last year, and statistically that's kind of fluky. But you can't rule them out of the discussion, especially if they try to get better on paper than they were last year, which I think is going to have to be a must if they're going to, even keep pace with everybody else in this thing here. But, Ken, just thoughts on how this whole delicious jumble of the AL East is shaking out right now.
Well, let me jump on board with what you and Steve have said, too, with Tampa, just so you have my vote. So, like Steve said, so a year from now, I'll totally look like a complete idiot. And Tampa takes it in the short, so to speak. No, but they do have a great, great organization. And that goes from the top on down. And I just like the way they take care of their business, like Steve said. They remind me a lot of the Patriots, the way their organization is run. It's first class, and it's always in the hunt. That being said, Tampa has pitching. If you can get rid of a Shields and a Wade Davis, who I keep waiting for him to take him out of the bullpen, but they just simply had no room in Tampa to move him into the starting rotation. That's pitching deep. I mean, here again, take in mind I'm from Cleveland, and our number three pitcher is probably Bauer now. But it's like, wow, you guys gave up Shields and Davis? But they can do that. So I think they're going to be in the hunt, no doubt. I agree with both of you that Baltimore is probably going to take a step back, although a big Showalter fan I am, and I won't put anything past him either. But Toronto intrigues me. I've been reading today off and on that they're trying to get R.A. Dickey. So they're going to give it everything they've got. So I'm going to go with Toronto right now. I do have to agree again with Steve. It sounds like a broken record with Reyes. Reyes, to me, is self-centered, but he still can play when he's not injured. He has a history of injuries, although last year wasn't one of them. But I have to go with Toronto to take it. And I have to go along with the Yankees. They've got one-year contracts. They're all in. These guys know how old they are. And it's going to be go, cat, go. They've got to go after it, and they will. So I think Toronto and the Yankees.
Well, one of the things that is very interesting to me, and when we talk about this, we talked about it a minute ago here with Tampa Bay, with Will Myers, and Ken, you and I both, for years being in the same keeper league that we've been in here, have always been intrigued by prospects. I am proud to say I got Will Myers on my roster in this 20-team league, so looking forward to seeing him break out in Tampa. I've never had a Baseball America Minor League Player of the Year before, so very, very happy about his opportunity there. But this is a very strange thing we're seeing this winter, seeing these top-rung prospects right about ready for the bigs. I can't remember a time when there was one guy who was right about ready to pop like Will Myers is getting moved. much less now, too, because you mentioned Trevor Bauer for Arizona. And if you look at any of the rankings out there, he was one of the top-rated pitchers in the minor leagues, just getting ready to, make his – I think he had four starts last year, but basically 2013 being the real start of his major league career. What do you ascribe this to, Ken? Do you see any kind of a trend here on this, or is this just a thing where it's just kind of fluky? We're seeing it in a couple different situations, and teams trying to use some of their top prospects, if they are deep in them, to try to use a piece to get over the top.
Well, the game has changed completely. Yeah, it's a lot. The big names like Greinke and all the ones that have been traded, Hamilton and everybody, or free agents and so forth. The money is such that I don't think there's a whole lot left over. In some cases, I think you're forced to play these blue chip players and goose them up there. I remember when I was a kid, the older men, the adults would tell me that, you don't bring a prospect up until they're 26. And
wow.
that was the mantra. Now if you're 26, you're long in the tooth. So I guess you throw that out of the window. I mean, you're not diving into, Al Kaline stuff where you bring them up when they're 18 or 17 years old and Jimmy Nuxhall or whatever. I just think it's money because guys like Pujols and these guys are on these rosters. They're making, $20, $25 million a year, and that eats up a lot of your cap money. So that's one thing. I think the kids are getting better, too. Look what Washington's done. Look at those young kids. My gosh, they draft them. Next year they're up on the big club, and it's that's unheard of. You're right, Rick. It's just a head scratcher. It's fun as a fan to watch these guys because back in the day those guys would fall flat on their face.
I can't even imagine if Mike Trout came up in a world where 26 was the age where we're not even going to call him up until then. Yeah, you have to wonder. Yeah, how many guys were victim to that mentality at that time?
Yeah, and I started in the fantasy league, Rick, I used that mantra the first couple of years because that's what I was told growing up. 26, and then I was like, "No, really, this is a whole new millennium. It's time to get with it." So. And that's why I am always an also rant, I guess. But I will shut up and let you guys get in here on your opinions.
you've made the playoffs. You've continued to build something nice here. No question about it. And I've seen you kind of adjust as the years have gone along. And you're not a guy who repeats his mistakes. I can certainly say that. That's all any of us can hope for. That's all I ever hope for is not to repeat my mistakes. But Steve, what are your thoughts on the industry and the way that it's going? Is there any kind of macro statement that you're seeing coming out of this with Myers and Bauer getting traded here, or is it that just another blip that, okay, situationally Arizona and Kansas City felt like they needed to get another piece or two, and that's what they felt like they had to do?
Well, I view them as a little different, although I totally agree with Ken. Once upon a time, in a time far, far away, guys went to the minor leagues for 4 or 5 years to learn how to play baseball. So I'm sure
you
guys do what I do, and you watch the TV from a baseball fundamental from a mental game. You shake your head. These guys have no idea how to really, really play baseball when they get to the majors, but they are so super talented. And I don't mean Mike Trout. He's the exception to the exception. When Ken's talking about Al Kaline, Mike Trout would have been like a modern-day Al Kaline. That's how good he is. But generally speaking, if you watch baseball and the mental IQ, the baseball IQ of some of these guys, it's ridiculous. The reason that didn't happen 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago is because, again, these guys had 3, 4, 5, 6 years in the minors, and when they showed up, they knew how to play baseball, and the only question was, did they have the talent to play at that level? Now, these guys who come up, they have unbelievable talent that sometimes we can't even fathom, but oftentimes have no clue how to play the game, so it has kind of reversed. I thought the whole Will Myers thing for KC, and look, I don't follow the Royals, but obviously they're in the American League. I do watch them. But what the Royals have done, to their credit, A, they got a number one. I understand and I agree that Shields is not David Price, But he is a number one. He walks in there, and he is David Price of the Kansas City Royals. But, you know, they almost got they also got Irvin Santana, who, yes, is up and down, but immensely talented. Wade Davis, I agree with Ken. I think he's a starter. Again, I watch because of my son, for better or worse, I watch a lot of Tampa Bay games. And you probably know they also kept Jeremy Guthrie. So look at their four.
Yep.
James Shields, Irvin Santana, Jeremy Guthrie, Wade Davis. That's a pretty good pitching staff. And my sense is they thought, if we can get two starters, including one who, okay, maybe he's not a one, maybe we'll call Shields a two, wherever you want to go with that, they now have a locked-in rotation. And, yes, Will Myers is going to be unbelievable, supposedly can't miss, and Tampa Bay is good at bringing along those unbelievable can't-miss guys, see David Price. But I think the Kansas City Royals, frankly, I think they did a good job. Bauer, you know, Rick, my son goes to college in Oberlin. He's like, he goes to Indians games all the time, and he says, my goodness, you can get a real good seat out here, and it's not so expensive. We're not in New York anymore. And to watch what the Indians have done, you know, they do – that's the problem. The Indians last year, as you guys know even better than I, they had a run early, but it's hard for those teams to sustain it. Baltimore could because, A, they had excellent pitching, and, B, they did get the breaks. I agree with you guys on the regression of the Orioles because they won so many one-run games. It was mind-boggling. I think it was Major League record mind-boggling. But as you know, Shin Soo Chu didn't want to play for the Indians. I think Scott Boras was his agent, so they traded him. But they did get Stubbs, who's a good outfielder, and Bauer is a top prospect, so they did as good as they could do the old under the circumstances thing. I thought last year they could have made a run if you know, Hafner had been healthy. I thought Sizemore with that aging veteran leadership of guys who could play, but as you know, both of them got hurt, one worse than the other. So I was intrigued by the Indians last year, and I did go to a couple of games myself. My goodness, what a beautiful field. It really was, you know, it's got that minor league ballpark feel, which is fantastic, and obviously Major League Baseball there. I really, that Hall of Fame back there, and you know I'm a Yankee guy, Rick, that Hall of Fame back there is better than Monument Park and Yankee Stadium.
Wow. Well, that's very interesting. I have to say, Ken and I would probably quibble with you on the Major League Baseball thing here, having suffered through years of this ownership. You know, you say tomato, we'll say tomato. But, let's go to an interesting place here, and I'm going to start with something that you were talking about, Steve. Let's wax a little philosophical on this when you're talking about what Kansas City did. Because you have to measure it against these other moves here. When you talked about Shin Soo Chu getting moved to Cincinnati, what a lineup they had last year. What a lineup they're going to have this year with a whole year of Joey Votto, presumably.
Right.
We just look in the same division at what Detroit's doing. Detroit re-ups Anibal Sanchez to come back in there at an inflated price, perhaps, given the pitching market. But the point is they got him back. So when you're a team like Kansas City, and this is the conundrum here, you look at the pitching. Yeah, that pitching looks above average that you were outlining that they're going to have. But is it a sense that, okay, if you just make it to October, it's a crapshoot, anything can happen. Look at St. Louis 2 years ago. Is it a sense of just do that? Because on paper, they don't look like they measure up with Detroit. They don't look like they measure up in the American League with Tampa Bay or the Angels or anybody else. So I'll start with you, Steve. What are the thoughts on this and on basically, as I see it, going halfway compared to the real mega contenders? And I realize they don't have the money to compete on that basis, but still, the whole thing of we're going for it now, does that really ring true?
No, it doesn't really ring true. Do I think Kansas City has any chance to beat the Tigers? I think they have the slimmest chance in the world, not even a puncher's chance. But if you had a bunch of Kansas City fans on, I think, or even a KC expert, I think they would say, look, we're a lot better off. You know, we can't really wait for a Will Myers, and even if we wait 3 years for him and we got one guy, what are we going to do? At least now we're going to trot out a pretty good major league pitcher every day, and that's a lot more than we can say what we did last year. But you're right, it still is. I love baseball. I think it's the greatest sport by far, but it still is, for the most part, the land of the haves and the have-nots. And unless you're a Tampa Bay team, and I've been in that stadium, which looks like they play baseball on a pool table down there. And I also understand Tampa Bay, Florida, hard to get baseball all year around, even with a dome. But you have to be the Tampa Bay manager and the Tampa Bay front office. Do I think they could go over to Kansas City and win that division? No, I don't. And I'll say it again, much as I'm impressed with Tampa Bay, they did have 8 or 9 or 10 number one picks in a row because they were so bad for so long. Think of the Lou Piniella years and even before that. But yeah. I think you need – and the Indians, frankly – and I know I'm treading on your territory there, fellas, but the Indians, frankly, remind me a little of KC because, to me, they have to have fantastic managers. They have to have fantastic front office guys. And then even when that happens, they have to get fantastic seasons from the players they have. So, yeah, I think if you had a KC guy on, he would say, look, we're hopeful, you know, anything can happen, but we are going to trot out a major league pitcher there every day, and that's more than we could say last year.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, you're definitely right about that. Ken, how do you see it? A team like Kansas City, they're, you know, those who watch Breaking Bad might perhaps look at what Kansas City has done and call it half measures, perhaps. You know, Mike the Cleaner might be saying that's not how you want to do that, no half measures, Walt. But then again, you know, if it's enough to get you to October, crazy things can happen. We keep seeing it every year. It's gotten to be more like March Madness all the time. So philosophically, Ken, what are your thoughts on what a team has to do to try to advance when they've been bad as long as KC?
Well, this is where I agree, Vlad, but I just might as well hit an agree button with Steve and on the show. But Kansas City is, they're going to trot out a guy every year or every game, a starter, a legitimate starter. And how nice is it that we're even mentioning Kansas City?
Right.
You know, last time maybe George Brett was playing for him. But you know, the thing to Kansas City that I like besides what they've done with their pitching, first of all, they've developed a lot of young pitchers that just have not come to fruition yet. So they're still down there in the minor leagues, unlike the Indians who have nothing down in the minor leagues.
Right.
They have an extremely young everyday lineup, which might hold out over the Detroit Tigers in case there's an injury just because of youth. That's a stretch. That's a long shot. I would not bet on that. I think there could be a case made that the Tigers might have the best pitching rotation of all baseball with Verlander, Scherzer, Pfister, Sanchez now, and, you know, whatever else they throw out there. It's just these guys.
Porcello?
Porcello, yes. How did I forget him? But that pitching staff in that park with, you know, a Triple Crown winner, and Cecil Fielder, who, you know, helped make any three-hole hitter look good, as he did in his days in Milwaukee and now in Detroit. I have to go with Detroit on that. But, yeah, Kansas City's in the mix. It's nice to hear names like Kansas City, Baltimore, Toronto. Good God, Joe Carter was the last time they were relevant. so... I have to go with the Tigers. I have to agree again with what Steve is saying. That yeah, until somebody knocks them off, I didn't think they had a chance there for the longest time when the White Sox jumped out and stayed tough. But,
yeah, that Detroit really kind of underachieved a good part of the year, but in the end, the depth wins out and the talent that they had. And, you know, you talk about that pitching rotation, and maybe it wasn't manifestly evident against San Francisco, although distortions can happen in a short series. But, yeah, through much of October, people would look at that rotation 1-4 and be tempted perhaps to agree with your assessment of that, Ken. So just to bring things full circle, and I'll start with you again, Ken, thoughts on any of the other signings that we've seen thus far this winter that you think move the needle at all, whether it be B.J. Upton going to Atlanta 5 years, $75 million, Angel Pagan back with the Giants at an inflated four-year, $40 million rate. Some of the other things that have happened here. Melky Cabrera to the Blue Jays. That seems kind of risky. 2 years, $16 million. Anything at all? David Ortiz back to the Red Sox. 2 years, $26 million. Any of these moves whatsoever, Ken, do you think you know, spills any beer down at the VFW Hall, or are all of them kind of, you know, unimpactful in your estimation?
Most of them are unimpactful, I think. In fact, I think they'd move the meter the other way. I don't think Chu is going to be a big factor. I don't think Boston, like you mentioned earlier, I don't think they've really improved themselves. Detroit, I hear, is talking, trying to get Hanrahan. I, again, I'm qualifying all this because I don't think these teams are done. It's really fascinating from where I'm sitting, gentlemen, where a handful of teams, and the phrase I think, Rick, you used, they're all in. To me, that's exciting. The Angels are all in. The Dodgers are all in. I think Detroit is all in. Toronto. Some of these teams, and to me, that's exciting. That's like, wow, they are. They're pushing all their chips into the middle of the table and say, here we go. The Yankees, one-year contract. When you put it up to A-Rod and some of these other guys that they used to have, it used to be 10 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever the case may be. Same with Boston. But now there's a big adjustment going on here, and the thing is moving. The meter is moving one way or another here. Teams are either all in and going all for it, and the rest of the teams just get the heck out of the way.
Absolutely, yeah. If you're not trying to lurch forward right now, you are getting passed at a rapid rate by the teams that have that kind of commitment. And I have to say, Steve, as Ken was talking about that, all the chips in the middle of the table, you were probably having some bad Jim Fossil flashbacks there. But your thoughts on
Rick, let me say this about Jim Fossil. When he did that all the chips in the middle thing, I wrote a column. It takes no guts for him to say that. The Giants had the easiest schedule in the history of the world the rest of that season, and they made the playoffs, and they made such a big deal out of it, but it was the chips were all in because it's not that he had four aces, that he knew that everybody he was playing against had, a pair of sixes or something. So it is very funny, but that was so overrated. And interestingly, as you both know, Fossil has never gotten back into the NFL in coaching.
No.
That's a very interesting dynamic over the years. A guy who took a team to the Super Bowl can't get a job, so there was more there than meets the eye, but I always thought that was seriously. It's like he knew the other teams were terrible. He knew what their cards were, and he had, a pair of kings or something, but he knew he was going to win, which he did. But I will give you a couple thoughts. The B.J. Upton signing, I'm on the fence again because of my son. I watch Tampa Bay a lot. This guy is ultra, ultra talented. There's no doubt about it, but he had problems with Joe Maddon early on in terms of even trying. He's an enormous talent. He mysteriously, the last month of the year, was unbelievable. Maybe it was because it was his contract year. But Atlanta, as you know, did sign Jordan Walden as well. I think they're going to be better. I think the signing I would point to, we mentioned it briefly, and it's not a big signing, but it's a good signing for a big team, plus they got another guy coming back. We did talk about the Tigers, but they signed Torrey Hunter. He's a solidifying player. And don't forget, Victor Martinez is back, so they're going to be unbelievable. I mean, Ken talked about their pitching staff correctly, but they're going to be unbelievable, and they're really getting not just Torrey Hunter. They're getting Torrey Hunter and Victor Martinez back. So I think, as many thought they would run away with the division this year, I think they will run away with the division in 2013.
Yeah, and I think
that's possible.
Oh, go ahead, Rick.
No, I just agree. Ken, go right ahead, buddy.
I forgot about Martinez. That's a great – and Hunter, because I was my focus is usually on the pitching. But, yeah, those are excellent points. And may I just say I was wrong? In 2010, I think I said that the Giants or the – San Francisco Giants were a bunch of banjo hitters and probably wouldn't repeat. And now they've won two out of the last three World Series. So,
they're banjo hitters that manage to. You were right about them, but I still can't figure out how they're doing it. You're supposed to win with purely situational hitting.
But if they win again this year coming up, that's 3 out of 4 years. I mean, I know that's an if and buts were nuts. But, I really miss that one. So I didn't mean to get off topic. So.
I think a lot of people did. I think, in all fairness, a lot of us were wrong about them. And with what they've been able to do, it has been just truly, truly remarkable. But remarkable also happens to sum up this panel here today, the putting together of you gentlemen for the first time. Greatly enjoyed it, as I know the listeners do as well. Ken Detweiler, who I, as I indicated, longtime sidekick for on his own web show, Life's a Pitch, back in the day, and Steve Callis, who has been one of our treasured regulars here over the course of the last 2 to 3 years in the FDH Lounge. Guys, this was tremendous, and this will not be the last time we do this when we're talking baseball, possibly even still this winter. I really appreciate it. for you guys being on for our landmark 225 mini episode. Thank you so much, guys.
Rick and Ken, great to be with you. I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, same here, Steve. Good talking to you. And Rick, always a pleasure working with you. So
appreciate it, fellas. This was truly outstanding. And thank you all for tuning in. FDH Lounge mini episode number 225.